welcome everyone, and thank you so much for the opportunity to join you. I really appreciate it. This is going to be a high point of my day. I'm very interested in learning a little bit more about your class. It sounds like such an interesting opportunity. Give me a little bit of a background and an overview of what you've been doing this semester.
Yeah, of course. Hi, I'm Becca, and I'm a math student. So this course has just taken up both a bunch of groups of STEM students here at the U, and we focused on studies and discussions about various diversity and inclusivity topics and issues. It's the newest class at the U, I guess, for this type of a class. It started at Amherst College about 4 years ago and spread throughout universities in the Northeast, including Yale and Brown University. This is the first time it's taught at a public university, so that's kind of exciting for us. So we focus on identities through the semester with the discussion and research papers, primarily like race and sexual orientation, gender, economic status, disability, and a lot of others as well, and kind of how they affect the learning environment for STEM students here at the U.
Well, I'd love to hear a little bit about how you think this class has influenced the way you think about STEM and about your experience. I did not realize that this was the first time this class had been taught at a public university. So that's interesting. It'd be interesting to compare actually across different types of institutions, whether some of the same themes are emerging. So that's interesting as well. Tell me a little bit about some of the big things you've learned, and perhaps I understand that one of the signature pieces of this class has been this end of semester project. I'd point you in that direction and love to hear more.
Yeah, well, we've been working on a really cool project, and as part of this project, we want to, you know, learn about students. And, you know, by the way, I'm Logan, I'm a physics major. And so when I joined this class, I had a desire to make a positive impact on our campus community. But, you know, I needed direction, and I wanted to better understand, you know, the needs of my fellow students. And that's what our project is focused on. But for me, this class has really highlighted many of the inequities in the resources available to students with different backgrounds. And as a religious student, I have been interested in the needs of students of different religious persuasions to have accommodation. For example, I learned that the only place to pray on campus is at the Union. And this is a challenge for Muslim students who pray 5 times a day, forcing them to run all over campus between classes. Additionally, Muslim students have a hard time finding food on campus that aligns with their dietary restrictions. And this is a major challenge for them in completing a STEM degree. I've also learned that, you know, women in STEM are heavily impacted by these inequities. Women are underrepresented in the STEM colleges across campus, and Utah has the lowest percentage of women in STEM in the workforce of all the state.
I'm Kira. I'm a math student. This class taught me that so many students are negatively impacted by this expectation that they must leave their identities at the door when they walk into their STEM classrooms. Time and time again, we see that this attitude benefits white, affluent, cisgender, heterosexual, non-disabled men, while simultaneously harming all underrepresented students. And this helped me realize what I deserve in my own math classes, that my queer identity is relevant and is allowed to be seen. I had hoped to share some statistics on queer students in STEM at the U, but this is such a grossly under-researched area that I couldn't find any. So what I did find was a recent study on queer professional scientists across America, which revealed that 70% of scientists believe the discussion of queer identities in the workplace was unprofessional, even though analogous discussions by cisgender, heterosexual scientists is completely routine. So queer people deserve better. We should be able to bring our full identities into the classroom and workplace.
Hi, I'm Selena, and I'm a geology student. As a woman of color in STEM, everything we've learned about this class has really been validating for my personal experiences and feelings. Since being in this class, I feel a lot more solid in my science identity, which is something that I've struggled with in the past, and my self-confidence has really grown. I've also learned so much about different identities, such as disability status and sexual orientation, and the struggles that accompany these identities in relation to pursuing STEM. It's been so awesome to create friendships with these other STEM students and faculty who also care about these issues. This class has been very impactful to me, and I will always hold on to what I've learned.
Very, very powerful insights that you have just expressed, Logan, Kira, Selena. Really appreciate that. And one of the things that's most interesting to me about this is I've been at this now for a while, like 30 years, 31 years in higher ed. If I count graduate school, it would be since 85. And it's amazing to me how both awareness has changed dialogue has changed, but some of the core issues of inclusion and inclusivity remain the same. And I think early, you know, for years, we've talked about women in STEM fields and worked on things like advanced grants. And the concerns and the issues that you are pointing to, there's a common thread that has run for the 31 years I've been paying attention as an assistant professor all the way through. And I think it's the kind of work you're doing in this class that will allow us to do better and to do more. So Corey, tell me a little bit about your end of semester project.
Okay, so hi, I'm Corey, as you said, and I'm a computer science student. A big part of the Being Human in STEM class is typically the end of semester project that we as students get to decide on. We really wanted to learn more about the undergraduate STEM climate at the U, so we decided to survey current students. Our whole recruiting process lasted a bit longer than 2 weeks, beginning on the 27th of February. We put out flyers, advertised on social media, and asked a bunch of our friends in STEM to fill it out. In the end, we collected 48 qualitative responses from students across the College of Science, the College of Engineering, and the College of Mines and Earth Sciences. We would have gone further and followed up with some students of interest to learn more, but then COVID-19 happened, and we had to adapt a little bit. And now here we are, speaking with you. I don't think any of us could have predicted being here at the start of the semester, or even a few weeks ago. We knew when we started this class that our project would be something a bit big, but it is truly amazing that we ended up here. We're really excited to be speaking with you, the president of our university, directly about the concerns STEM students at the U have and want heard.
Yes, I so appreciate the chance to hear from you. And I think remarkable effort that you've put into place. And I guess just as a small editorial here, if you ever needed a little impetus for why studying a STEM field matters, you've got it right now with coronavirus and COVID-19. We are all seeing the importance and the value of science that helps us understand particularly viruses and biological phenomena and how we're going to get from where we are to treatments and vaccines. And it's the scientists that are going to lead the way and the scientists that are helping us develop models. So thank you for staying in the fields you're in and for working through it. So sounds like you uncovered some themes in the survey that you want to talk about a little bit.
The student responses from the survey have been really amazing. We've gained a lot of valuable insights from those responses, and we'll share a few quotes followed by some questions for you. One of the College of Mines and Earth Sciences students from our survey said, "As the daughter of Mexican immigrant parents who is first generation, low income, and bilingual, I've often felt alone in my experiences in STEM at the U. I often don't see students with a background similar to mine, and sometimes I feel uncomfortable when I am the only student who appears to have a different skin color." This quote is only one example that we have received from the survey we collected. Based on research articles we have read and the survey responses, we have come to realize how fundamental student identities really are to classroom success. Often students will just accept non-inclusive classroom environments because they believe that is just the way things are. So from your point of view, what do STEM students deserve in their classrooms, and how should they expect their professors to treat them?
So I think what a great quote and a great question. I would say effective teaching, good teaching, is inclusive teaching. So those things must go together, and students have the right to expect that. There's a few things that I think we've both worked on and made some progress, and some areas as an institution that we need to continue to improve. One of the things I know is it's difficult, it's hard to be what you can't see. Having a more diverse faculty and staff makes a difference. And it makes a difference in our inclusive practices and also creates a model for people that they belong and that they can see themselves in the university. When I go and talk to industry employers in the Salt Lake Valley, every single time they will say to me, Adobe, for example, my first visit to Adobe, the leadership at Adobe said, "President Watkins, we will not be able to keep our headquarters here if you are not producing more diverse graduates from the University of Utah. We are creating products and selling products and solving problems for a global and diverse world. We need that representation in your engineers, in your science graduates, in your psychology graduates, in all of your fields." So clearly, this is a responsibility of the university. We've had a faculty hiring initiative to increase diversity in our faculty. That work must continue. That's one of the core ways. Representation is not alone enough to ensure inclusive teaching, but it certainly helps. And without it, it's very difficult to go forward. I would also say a few other things that we've done. Investing in training. In fact, one of the positive things about a moment like we're having right now is getting up an inclusive training platform that we are moving towards requiring for all faculty and staff. And it's called Get Inclusive. And we're just about to roll it out across the institution. And over the next year, ask that every single person who's employed at the university participates in the Get Inclusive training. There's a version for students as well. Right now, we're already more advanced in what training students receive and participate in. We need to get this to be a ubiquitous part of the university for faculty and staff. So thanks for that great question, Selena.
Thank you.
We had students in our survey talk about how positively they were impacted by their STEM professors. A physics student said, I went up to the board in one class to try to solve a problem and was so wrong, it was almost comical. I was overwhelmed and wanted to go hide in a corner. My professor guided me through the problem and I was able to sit down, but I was very upset by the failure. After the class, he told me that I was doing the right thing. It's hard, he said, and you're asking questions and trying to understand. That is how you learn, not by sitting passively and watching others solve things. Keep trying, you'll get it. I don't think he has any idea how much I needed those words that day. Every time I struggle now, I just remember that he believed I could do it and that I need to embrace the scary part of struggling.
But not all students had the same experience. One civil engineering student responded, "Oh, please, please just treat us like the young adults we are. We're not robots. We're expected to be young professionals with complex lives and full-time students at the same time. It's two full-time jobs. Please give us the resources we need for your class. Please give us ethical grading scales and feedback so we can see our grades and know how to improve them if we'd like to take the initiative. I'm not paying $1,000 a class to get frustrated, become lost and confused about the material, develop an acute mental disorder, and never get to see my family." So our question for you is, when a student feels that a STEM class is poorly or even harmfully structured or implemented, how can they make their concerns known in a way that feels safe for them? And how can they get support so they can still perform well in their STEM class, whether that means switching out or finding a new way forward?
One of the big challenges of a large university and a complex university, certainly we are proud of our stature as America's leading research university, that we're part of that group of great institutions. We will not always have uniform quality and uniform delivery in what we do. We have fabulous teachers, and you, Logan and Corey, you just kind of highlighted that. We're going to have remarkable people. We're also going to have people that are remarkable in some facets of their job and not uniformly remarkable at all parts of their job. It is an institutional responsibility to demonstrate our commitment to and value in teaching. So what can we all do about that? I would say on the part of university leaders, having a robust investment in a strong teaching and learning center where people can improve their teaching when they need to and want to, and using that as part of our criteria for how we hire and how we promote and reward people is important. We want to reward the faculty that are doing things like what Logan talked about and really make that clear that that's a value in our institution. Very, very important. I think from a student's perspective, what can you do? Certainly, it is important to speak up and express your concerns when you feel something is not being taught correctly, taught well, taught effectively, and taught inclusively. What's the best way for you to do that? I think first stop is the person themselves. I know when somebody has a concern about me, I surely appreciate it when they tell me and not my boss or my boss's boss or something like that. It's far better to, and of course you want to do this constructively, but to speak to a faculty member and say, I'm having trouble learning this way. This is difficult for me. Have you thought about this? Or where could I go for help? I think if that is not successful or effective, then it's appropriate to talk with a chair, an academic advisor. And if in particular, if you feel that there are really inappropriate things happening that are discriminatory or harassing, then of course the Office of Equal Opportunity. I always think that it's the most effective thing to try the local solution first and then move beyond that if you're not effective. The other thing I would say is people are a little bit different. It's interesting to me, and I get to talk to a lot of students. And some students will love a particular instructor and find them to be highly effective, and other people will find that person to be not very effective. So it isn't really a one-size-fits-all. So one thing that students can and should do is try to gain information about themselves, from their peers, from their advisors, from their department, about what the best fit is for them, and to feel empowered both to express themselves and their concerns and to feel like making a change is fine. The other thing I would say is I want students to know that course evaluations matter. We read them. We pay attention to them. It's worth taking the time to fill out a course evaluation. That's another way that your voice is heard. Admittedly, it's often for the people that are following you, but it does matter. So thank you. Good question.
Several students from the survey commented about active learning strategies. One such student is currently taking a math class that is flipped, meaning that students learn the material outside of class and primarily do practice problems during class time. They said, "I really appreciate the balance of out-of-class learning and in-class practice. It is really helpful to come to class prepared with questions so that I leave feeling more solid in the material than when I entered." So I know you already spoke a little bit about this inclusive teaching initiative, but I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about it and specifically what you're doing to promote active learning and evidence-based teaching for the STEM faculty at the U.
I think all of us know this from our own experiences that, and I certainly know it as a person who gives a lot of public talks and presentations. I feel like I've developed very good skills at reading my audience. Some faculty are great at that. Some faculty are not so great at that. But engaging actively and participating is a powerful learning experience. And I know from my own experiences that when you try to talk at people or have a lengthy PowerPoint and it's all like passive learning, it is very ineffective. People who have maybe 10 minutes that they can actually pay attention, and after that, they can't. I mean, it's physiologically impossible for people to stay with you, even if you're kind of entertaining. You have to have things that engage people, that reset the clock of attention and get people moving in that direction. So I think the best methods we have, you also have to realize that many of our faculty, and I'm looking around at the faculty colleagues that are here, had the same mixed experiences with education that you're describing. So many of us were taught in a very passive approach, a very lecture, note-taking, passive kind of way. So it isn't necessarily surprising that faculty reenact teaching and learning the way they experienced it. So probably the most effective thing we can do is provide that sort of education, training, learning about effective education for every incoming faculty member. And not just once, but to continue to do it through our teaching and learning center. What we don't do very well is require people to do that. And we probably should move toward a more, you have continuing education learning opportunities about effective teaching throughout your career. That's one effort that I think would work. The other one is to really enact using those, using effective teaching and participation in new learning about teaching as part of how we evaluate faculty and how we promote faculty.
That's awesome. Thank you. Throughout our survey, many students commented about anxiety, specifically a quote from a civil engineering student. They said, "I'm serious when I say that I gained feelings of acute chronic anxiety because of this class. I didn't feel like I was being treated like a human. I felt like a machine." We've learned a lot about these resources that students have as part of this course that we didn't know about, many of which I think could greatly improve the STEM students here at the U. Our question is, how do you think we could better connect STEM students to the resources across campus?
Yeah. So I think it's a great question, Becca, and it's a question I think is maybe particularly relevant in STEM, but I actually think it's relevant all over the campus. When you look at even national trends about anxiety and depression in college-age students, those trends have increased dramatically in the past 10 to 20 years. Very significant portions of students report anxiety, report levels of depression. It's startling. It's startling to me, and it's very concerning. What have we done about that at the University of Utah, and what more could we do, I think is really your question. One of the things that we have done is embed some counseling support and resources at the college level. I know that we've done that in the College of Science, for example. We have great leadership in the college with the new dean, and there are some direct workshops for students and about managing anxiety and depression that have been offered in the College of Science. I think maybe College of Engineering is where we ought to go next, based on kind of your quote and that question. A couple other things I'd want to mention. We are so honored and privileged to have the partnership of the Huntsman family in helping us to create the Huntsman Mental Health Initiative. One of the strands of that institute is a focus on college-age students. Many difficulties with mental health emerge during the college years. In fact, the highest sort of incidence of emergence of mental health problems is between the ages of 18 and 25. When you look, that's national, and it has been national. When you look at those data, you say, if we want to effectively support well-being and mental health, we need to do it during the college years. What we're doing on our campus is starting an effort to look at new ways of supporting students' mental health. And I personally think that the old model of one counselor, individual appointments with students isn't going to be as effective. We need more of a prevention model and a proactive approach. There are a couple things in the works right now at the U. One is an online module about mental well-being that a couple of psychologists and some of our students are creating that every student could participate in. It's much more oriented toward prevention, but it's also oriented toward what are the resources available to you on campus. And I think that might be quite helpful in this particular case of meeting some of those needs that you're talking about. It's important, I think, for every student to have an overview of mental health and well-being, much as we do about physical health and well-being. It's the same thing. And I think to do it in a more proactive format that's prevention-oriented would be so smart for our institution. I hope we can become a leader in this area through the help and support of the Huntsman family.
Yeah, that'll be awesome. I hope to see it go forward. It'll be great.
Yeah, we'll try, and we'll try. Perhaps the College of Science could be a good pilot for us, and maybe science and engineering together. And I will not forget Minds and Earth Science either, since you've drawn them into your survey as well. You're pretty spectacular people, faculty and students alike. I know almost all of you from running into you at different places around campus and just interacting with you. I'm really, really impressed with what you've done. I hope, if it's allowable, that perhaps, I don't know if there's going to be any kind of a written format of what you learned in this survey, but I wonder if it would be possible for me to get a copy, because I could learn a lot from it and make use of it. I'm seeing thumbs up. So you think you'd let me look at a written copy? That'd be great.
Yes, yeah. We're planning on writing a report as the students of the class, what we learned and what we've insights we've gained. And we'd be happy to share that with you once we get it done.
That's great. I think spectacular. And isn't it kind of amazing what you can do by Zoom? Because who would know that you accomplish all this?
Definitely. Also, like at the end of the semester, we're going to be having a symposium, and we've invited some of the deans from the College of Science to talk with us. And then also we're going to open it up to people on campus. Anyone want to join the Zoom call?
That's good. You know, one thing I really want to applaud you for, it's probably tempting to just pick out the problematic areas. The way that you framed this conversation was really helpful for me, because you're framing there's some things that are going pretty well, that there are examples of positives that are really working well, because that actually helps inform the what do we do about the things that are really a problem. And if you just go right to the problem, it's just kind of hard to start to say, wow, how you see some bright lights from the faculty member, for example, that Logan gave the example of, you know, really helping a student with a difficult problem and helping the student feel okay about not knowing what to do. So I like your approach of kind of, you know, here's the way it can go well, here's where it's breaking down, now let's try to bridge.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. All right. I think I might have to go to my next Zoom meeting.
We appreciate your time. Thank you.
I love how everybody's wearing red too. Good job. Well, so much. Thank you for great work. I appreciate it. It's fun for me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, President.
Take care, everybody. Be well. Stay safe.